In the 1960s, Jensenko's dad never had a bad word to say about any race or people or person.
Then in the 80s, after my dad discovered talk radio during a long commute to work, he suddenly didn't like black people, poor people, gay people, feminists, Hispanics, and especially Democrats. After he discovered Fox News, they became the enemy.
What happened to Dad?
The great story here for anybody willing to find it and write about it and explain it is this vast right-wing conspiracy, but it has not yet been fully revealed to the American public.
By the 70s and the 80s, the media had been taken over by the extreme right.
Homosexual marriage is such a threat to civilization itself.
Fox News came along.
Mass murder committed by immigrants.
God controls the climate. Come on!
In asking the question, what happened to her dad, it was really like asking what happened to our media. And in asking what happened to our media, it was really like asking what happened to our country.
Today on Tell Somebody, filmmaker Jensenko talks about her new documentary film, The Brainwashing of My Dad, the truth behind the right-wing media machine that changed a father and divided the nation. Stand by for Tell Somebody. Tell Somebody for March 17, 2016. Happy St. Patrick's Day. www.tellsomebody.us. On Twitter, at Tell Somebody Now. And like the Facebook page, www.facebook.com/tellsomebodynow. This is your host, Tom Clamer. The views and opinions expressed on this show are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect those of the station or anybody else involved with it. Next Thursday, March 24, 2016, my guest on Tell Somebody will be Mark Wilkerson talking about his new biography coming out next month, Thomas Young's War. I first met Wilkerson in November 2014 at the memorial gathering for Thomas Young, the Kansas City Iraq War veteran who was paralyzed by a sniper's bullet in 2004, became a prominent anti-war activist, and died November 2014. And next week's show will be the final regularly scheduled weekly edition of Tell Somebody. Next Tuesday, March 22, 2016, there will be a one-and-done special screening of a film by Jensenko, The Brainwashing of My Dad, the truth behind the right-wing media machine that changed a father and divided the nation. This special screening, 7 p.m. next Tuesday at the Tivoli Theater located in Westport Manor Square, 4050 Pennsylvania in Kansas City, Missouri. www.tivolikc.com is the Tivoli's website. The official website for the film is www.thebrainwashingofmydad.com. And there will be a panel discussion after the film featuring filmmaker Kevin McKinney, director of Corporate FM. Dr. Robert Miner, Professor Emeritus of Religious Studies, University of Kansas, and founder of the Fairness Project, and yours truly. Again, that's this Tuesday at the Manor Square in Westport, after the showing of the film at 7 p.m. Jen Senko is an award-winning documentary filmmaker based in New York City. Senko's first documentary, Road Warrior Women, won recognition with several festival awards, including Certificate of Merit finalists from the 2000 Houston Film Festival and the Special Jury Award from the 2001 Brooklyn Film Festival. Over the past 15 years, Senko has been involved in writing, directing, and producing. She started her company, J. Senko Productions, in order to produce a number of independent short films. Her most recent film, The Vanishing City, co-directed with Fiora De Rosa, exposes the policies and economic philosophy that has made New York a city for the rich. The Vanishing City garnered festival awards such as Best Feature Documentary in the Williamsburg International Film Festival, Best Short Documentary in the Harlem International Film Festival, and honorable mention in the Los Angeles International Film Festival. And I'm going to quote Jen Senko now. She said, "Years ago, it was with frustration and sadness that I watched my father, a sweet and goofy dad, go from being a Kennedy Democrat who was open-minded, had compassion for others, and an optimistic attitude towards life, to an intolerant fanatic who lived and breathed the right-wing agenda. Suddenly and inexplicably, he was railing against minorities, homosexuals, poor people, and Democrats. He became unrecognizable to his family and friends. He was angry all the time and sowed chaos wherever he went. I was mystified. I was compelled to make a documentary about it," Jen Senko said. "I began to investigate the right-wing media, unearthed a purposeful, methodical plan that took place over the last 40 years to take the country to the right. The story of my dad had become the story of the nation." Jen Senko. I reached her in New York and recorded this conversation. Give a listen. Jen Senko, welcome to Tell Somebody.
Oh, thank you, Tom. It's nice to be here.
Well, and we're tickled to have you. The Brainwashing of My Dad is the title of the film, and I understand, I think I read your father was born in 1922, mm-hmm. World War II veteran.
Mm-hmm.
Think of brainwashing. You wonder if he was captured by Chinese communists somewhere along the line. What's this all about?
No, he was never captured by any communists. So it's a story about both the transformation of my father after his discovery of right-wing media and the history and tricks of the trade behind that media. And I look at how the media changed over the last 30, 40 years through the lens of my father. It did become very powerful, and I think I've come to believe that it has brainwashed people. When I first titled the movie, The Brainwashing of My Dad, it was sort of tongue-in-cheek. I didn't really think it could be brainwashing. But then, really just recently, after finishing the movie, by the time I was done with it, and I had spoken with several neuroscientists, I came to believe he was brainwashed.
Yeah, and I've heard of at least a couple other specific examples of friends or acquaintances that feel their father was changed by listening to right-wing talk radio that changed them into something they almost didn't recognize. You found this to be the case elsewhere, too, I take it?
Oh, my goodness, yes. When I started the film, we did a Kickstarter campaign, and I had 947 donors, and I had so many people starting to write me about, like, oh, this happened to their dad, or their mom, or their brother, or their sister, or their uncle, you know, or brother, whatever. And they were really upset and had thought that they were alone. And so people began reaching out to me, and I almost had, like, a side thing that I did, you know, responding to these people. So that's when I realized this is a phenomenon.
And you said you started a Kickstarter. When was that, and how? Tell me a little more about how you came to the idea of making a feature-length film about this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had the idea about 15 years ago, but I think I didn't really quite have the confidence yet, because I knew it would be a very big and complex story, and I would have to tell it right. And but after I had you know, a couple more films under my belt, and the last one called The Vanishing City, that was, you know, very successful, I felt like, okay, this is the time. I'm ready to do it. I have to do it. And I felt driven to do it. I felt like I have to tell the story, because I don't hear really very many people coming out and telling the story. So, yeah, I started a Kickstarter campaign in, I think it was the fall of 2013. And after that, it just, starting in 2014, it was just two completely solid years of just working straight. You know, normally films take longer, but we just worked, you know, really hard. And the Kickstarter campaign was good, and then other people started to donate, and then, you know, I had an executive producer, Ryan Smith, who was very interested in coming on board as an investor, so I was really lucky that way.
Mm-hmm. And you got some fairly big names both appearing in this film, and it's not predominantly by any means an animated film, but you've got one of the big names of film animation these days, at least in the kind of alternative world.
Bill Plimpton?
Bill Plimpton, yeah. I started to say George Plimpton. Yeah, Bill Plimpton. I mean, when you talk about animation, at least outside of Disney and things like that, I mean, he's one of the big names, and you've got Matthew Modine as along with yourself narrating it, and he's one of the producers. There's some hefty names involved with this.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened. It was just serendipity. With Bill Plimpton, I knew him from a long time ago. When I went to Pratt, I met him. He didn't go to Pratt. He was we just met, you know, at some art party or something. And so I had already known him, so it wasn't like, you know, totally out of the blue. But when Adam Rakoff and Matthew Modine came on board, you know, they had seen the trailer and they wanted to get involved. Adam made it easy because he was doing a lot of work for Bill's Kickstarter for one of his films. So I was really lucky as far as that went. And then I just knew people that would say, oh, I know so-and-so. Like, for instance, a friend of mine who's a writer, Eileen Sutton, used to work with Noam Chomsky on WBAI, and she said, oh, Jen, you should interview Noam. I'm like, oh, are you kidding? Oh, yeah, that would be great. So it just happened that I just happened to meet these people, and one person would tell another person, and I just got really lucky.
Yeah.
Really lucky.
A lot of us would like to get hold of Noam Chomsky and interview him, but he's a pretty busy guy. So
yeah, I was incredibly honored.
Yeah.
And astounded. And nervous, of course, but he was very nice.
Yeah. This is Tom Clammer. You're listening to Tell Somebody. Jen Senko is on the phone. She's the director of the new film, The Brainwashing of My Dad. And, by the way, that is going to have a one-night-only special screening at the Tivoli Theater, Tuesday, March 22nd at 7 p.m. And there will be an after discussion with Kevin McKinney, director of the film Corporate FM, and Dr. Robert Miner, professor emeritus of religious studies, University of Kansas, and founder of the Fairness Project. And yours truly, host of Tell Somebody, will be on a panel too. And again, that is one night only, Tuesday, March 22nd, 7 p.m. at the Tivoli, and we'll repeat that information at the end of the show. So, Jen Senko, why should people come and see this? I mean, any artist wants people to see their work when they have a public display of it, but What do you hope this film to accomplish, and why should people in Kansas City come see it?
Well, for one thing, it is entertaining. It's entertaining. It's sort of lighthearted in a way. And it's got a tremendous and very, very, very important history in it of the right-wing media and how that got started. And I think everybody should know about it. I think, even if I do say so myself, it's a very, very important film. And I think that it's such an important subject. It's something, you know, we should all be talking about, and maybe we'll be talking about years to come, like about this period where so many people were bamboozled.
Yes, and, you know, anybody that's not just totally comatose in this country right now has a sense of what kind of a presidential campaigns we've got going on. A lot of us, I would hope most of us, I don't know, rather troubled by the nature of it. This kind of explains a lot about how we got to this point, doesn't it? I mean, we just had Donald Trump here this past weekend in downtown Kansas City, and we saw a video of mounted police officers on horseback spraying garden hose-sized streams of tear gas in the crowds outside the theater where Trump was speaking. There's a reason we've gotten to this point, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, it's my summation, what I feel, is at some point Trump started watching Fox News. So I feel like the GOP created Fox News and created the climate for talk radio with all these other things that I talk about in my movie, like the Telecommunications Act, the Fairness Doctrine. So they created this right-wing media. This media created people like Donald Trump, and he's feeding it back to these people who also watch Fox News and listen to right-leaning radio. And it's kind of like they created a monster, because now he's it's no longer dog whistle politics. And I think most people know what we mean by that. Like, they used to be more subtle, these far-right Republicans, not all Republicans, but these far-right ones. And anybody who watches, you know, Fox News, I think Fox News is far-right. They call it conservative. I don't think it's conservative. They speak in code about, you know, race and sex. And he's a product of it, and the people that are attracted and drawn to him are a product of it, too. So you're absolutely right, and it's frightening. I mean, media matters, you know, and I think it has such an influence on people. We're probably not even aware of how much we're influenced by, you know, media like TV and radio. It's very powerful, and it can be hypnotizing, hypnotic, and I believe can actually brainwash people.
1971, something called the Powell Memo was written. Some of us have heard media authorities talking quite a bit about this in the last year or two. Some of us maybe haven't heard about it yet. Talk to me about the Powell memo.
Right. So the Powell memo was written by Lewis Powell, and it was really an answer to what was going on, the kind of like the cultural revolution that was going on at the time. You know, mores were changing. It was less about business and, you know, more about more socially conscious ideas. And the business community was very alarmed, and Lewis Powell wrote this, at that time it was a secret memo, and I don't have the name of it in front of me, I forget, but it was to all business leaders and corporations, saying that nobody wants to be, you know, a businessman anymore. So we have to change the thinking of the country. We have to change the media. We have to create think tanks. We have to, you know, we have to get the whole impression of business folk changed. So that was the memo, and it went out to everybody, and I mean all of these, the business community, and I don't think he even realized how much it impacted the, you know, the country.
Certainly, whether people all read the memo or what their influences were, the things he wrote about were changed in the ways that he suggested. And when he wrote it, he was some kind of a corporate lawyer addressing some of his constituents or whatever. Shortly afterwards, he became a Supreme Court justice, right?
Right, appointed by Nixon.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know. We were talking off air a little while ago about my disappointment in some of us in the public. It seems to me the success of the strategies that he outlined should suggest to progressives, liberals, whatever terms you want to use, maybe we need some kind of anti-Powell memorandum and strategy that I don't see happening.
Yeah, it's funny that newscasters just seem to just dance around the issue. To me, it's all so obvious. You know, something happened, and a lot of it, much of it started with the Powell memo. but not all of it. I mean, it's like, for instance, newscaster will say, oh, it's puzzling why the Christian right likes Donald Trump. And to me, it's so obvious that it has to do with the media. You know, a lot of the Christian right has listened to Fox News, who have claimed themselves to be the true patriots, and, you know, the one Christian station. And, yeah, the Powell memo was incredibly successful.
Even 1 year before the Powell memo, there was a memo written by Roger Ailes, 1970.
That was really interesting. Roger Ailes was a TV producer at the time, and he was really, really good. I mean, he was brilliant when it came to television, and he understood the significance and the importance of television. And he got hooked up with Nixon, and he had seen Nixon, you know, on the debate with Kennedy, and he was just awful. You know, he was sweaty and shifty-eyed and, you know, just looked very uncomfortable. And clear, you know, lost the debate. If you were watching it, you'd say he lost the debate. So he sort of helped prep Nixon to, you know, say short, snappy one-liners and, you know, wear makeup properly, et cetera, et cetera. And then when he was sort of working for the White House, they noticed that, like, Walter Cronkite was the one, you know, the leader in the news at the time, and positive things weren't coming out about the war or anything like that. So it's not clear whether it was Roger Ailes who wrote the memo, but his handwriting is all over it, and his notes are all over it. Anyway, it was a memo that said how to get the GOP on news on television. And it was like a blueprint for Fox. I mean, everything it said, you know, 59% of the country gets its news from television. You know, people don't want to think. They're dumb. They want to be told what to think. And, you know, we can feed them what we want them to think. So, that was another memo that came out in 1970, just a year before the Powell memo.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly how it came in, but somewhere in the film, in connection with your telling of the Roger Ailes story, there's a big headlining of his phrase, the people are lazy, I think it was.
Yeah, that's actually in the memo. People are lazy, they want their thinking done for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, this is Tom Clammer. We're talking about the film The Brainwashing of My Dad. We have the director on the phone, and we'll get back to more of this in just a minute after you listen to these messages.
What if we had more hard-hitting journalism, more local stories, more quality kids' shows, more independent voices?
What if we had more people telling their friends about the vital information they hear on KKFI? What if we had more listeners supporting community radio in Kansas City and the surrounding area? Most of the nearly 2 million people our 100,000-watt transmitter can reach have never heard of us. What if more people helped us get more hard-hitting journalism and more local stories on the air on KKFI? What if more people realized the potential of KKFI and got involved in trying to reach that potential?
What if we had less celebrity fluff, less mind-numbing advertising, less partisan shouting, less junk TV? We need more public media, better public media, new public media, now.
Welcome back to Tell Somebody. This is your host, Tom Clammer, and on the phone with me is Jen Senko, director of the documentary film, The Brainwashing of My Dad. When you actually started filming, where was your dad at? Was he still brainwashed, so to speak?
Yes, he was. And in the beginning of the film, you can see that's when I finally started filming him. I mean, actually, before that, I was sort of afraid to. But my parents had moved to a retirement community. And, so he was still, in the beginning, he was still brainwashed. Well, my parents moved to a senior community, and somehow in the move, my dad's radio broke. So it just kind of sat in the garage, and it never really got fixed. And so my parents started eating lunch together again. I mean, it was kind of good that they moved, because they sort of kind of recreated like new habits. So since the radio was broken, they were eating lunch together again. They didn't do that before, when my dad would have his Limbaugh lunches, because my mom really didn't like listening to Rush Limbaugh. He thought he sounded mean. And so that was the start. And then one day they got a new TV in the kitchen, which is where he used to watch Fox, and my mom loves like programming remotes, and somehow the way she programs them is not always very easy to figure out. And she programmed the remotes, and there was two of them, and they had notes on them and everything, and so he just didn't bother like trying to figure it out. So he would watch what she watched, in the kitchen, and very gradually, he just started softening, and one day he was watching Obama on television, and he told my mother, I think I like that guy. I like Obama. He's not so bad. So that was kind of the start of what appeared to be his deprogramming, if you will. I don't know if I can really call it that, but then what happened is, one time he went in the hospital for a kidney stone, and they had these old computers, and the emails took up space on the computers, and my mother asked me to, could you weed out some of Daddy's emails? It's just piling up, and I would do it, but I said they just keep coming. So she started unsubscribing him from some of them, and then started subscribing him to various progressive emails.
And what he had been getting were the kind of extreme right-wing, hate Obama, all this kind of stuff.
Oh, yes. I mean, they were everything from the Heritage Foundation to the NRA, which really he had never cared anything about in his life, like the NRA. He wasn't a hunter, and even in World War II, he was a medic. So she started signing him up with Truth Out and Reader Supported News, and kind of playing a little trick on him.
Yeah. So it sounds like some of this was circumstantial or serendipitous with the move to a retirement home, but some was pretty deliberate on your mother's part.
Yeah, she was, she had to suffer the most of it, because she lived with him. So I guess to her it was sort of freeing, like, wow, I have an opportunity here. So she took it. And my dad just started to soften. Mm-hmm. And his views changed.
How aware of the filming and the nature of the whole project was he, and did he think about what you were doing at different points in his journey and yours through this?
Well, he was used to seeing me with a camera all the time. You know, I just, first I was shooting my mother most of the time. I first shot him. He was happy to, you know, spout his views about Limbaugh and all that. And he enjoyed that. And then, you know, I had this period of time where I was just with the camera and I was shooting my mom a lot. And then I would shoot him a little bit. And eventually I told them what I was doing. And by that time, though, he was kind of like, oh, well, he knew that I was a filmmaker, and he was okay with it. That's but it was the emails that really got us in the beginning, because he, once he got into emails, he just he signed up with all these far-right groups, and he just started emailing us all the time. Forwarding us these emails either about, you know, how Obama snubbed a soldier and he's really from Kenya, you know, or just anything, like just these, and the whole family would just beg him, please don't send us these emails. You know, a lot of them were violent, obviously some of them were made up, and nobody really, they were kind of like, they were mean, he would get nasty about them, you know, and he'd say, you know, you better wake up and, you know, understand what's going on, and, you know, Democrats are destroying the country. And eventually what happened is we had to start blocking him. And the only person that didn't block him was my mom. And she, in turn, became political. She would just look up, do a lot of research, and, you know, she'd say to herself, well, that can't be right. That can't be right. And she would look something up and fact check and, you know, send him sources. And so, you know, she'd been kind of like in a way working on him for a while. But good. That's kind of what turned most of us off in the family.
Getting the emails from him.
Yeah, and that they were never personal, and they were always angry and unpleasant, and, you know, just we thought they were really radical.
And this wasn't the father you remembered from your childhood at all, right?
No, the father I remember from my childhood was, he was a Kennedy Democrat, and he loved everybody. He was always accepting. I never heard him say anything bad about people. I mean, my parents didn't even gossip. And he was just very, very open-minded. And I remember being proud of them for that. And, you know, so then when he started to change and becoming angry at different groups and all this, you know, it was just very puzzling, and it was, you know, it was upsetting to the whole family. So, it wasn't the dad I remember from when he was young. He just completely changed. And that was what I found when I spoke with a lot of these people, you know, that contacted me, like that they couldn't believe how their loved one changed.
So you got a lot of that anecdotally, but I didn't see too much of, you know, clinical psychology. You did at least brush up on a little science about how this works, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I spoke with two neuroscientists. One of them was Dr. Kathleen Taylor of Oxford in London, and she really wrote the book about brainwashing, literally. Mm-hmm. So, I had read their books and had conversations with them. And then there were other sources I had too, but I didn't meet with them, but that I would read their books, like State of Confusion, but I forget who that's by. So, yeah, I did quite a bit of research on it.
And this actually takes place. It's not just some flippant term.
Yeah, it's not just, you know, a word from the Red Scare days. It's not just a word. You know, we say brainwashing, and we think of you know, the Vietnamese, like brainwashing camps, you know, where they tortured people and psychologically and, you know, forcibly impose their views on them. You know, it's that's what we think of, but it's not like that. I mean, that's one way of brainwashing people, but as Dr. Kathleen Taylor says, there's two means. The other one is more subtle. It's the one is by force, and the other one is where you don't have any choice in what you're listening to or watching, and it just you know, you're isolated, and it just happens. There's no other information coming in.
Yeah.
I never knew there was war on Christmas until my dad started sending us, the whole family, emails about dreaded, horrible, terrible, evil liberals who wanted to kill Christmas, and liberals who didn't even want Christmas trees in schools or red or green allowed anywhere. And whether it was Christmas Day or not, in fact, it usually wasn't Christmas Day, he would just say adamantly, "Merry Christmas," wherever he went. To if he saw somebody in front of a synagogue, let's say, he would say, "Merry Christmas," because those damn liberals, they weren't going to take Christmas away from him. There was no happy holidays for Frank Sanko, my dad. So I learned how the country was pushed to the right, and a whole new media was created to help that along. My dad and many others got swept up in that tide. I didn't think he was actually brainwashed. Didn't you need brainwashing camps, like where someone is locked away with constant words and images coming at them in their every waking hour? But I wanted to explore that notion. I found neuroscientist Kathleen Taylor from London, who is an expert on brainwashing. I interviewed her via Skype.
There are kind of two ways you can think about brainwash. You can either think of it as this very coercive, forced psychological torture where people are put into situations, put through horrors, and, you know, actually browbeaten into believing or pretending to believe something new. So that's brainwashing by force, if you like. Then there's brainwashing by stealth, which is where it's not so much that they are forced to believe stuff, it's just that all the information that comes at them is pushing a line. And so there is no alternative in terms of information. And if you control the information that goes into a brain, to a great degree you control what that brain is going to do in terms of what the person's going to believe. You're not forcing anybody to believe it, but you're making it difficult for them to think of anything else because their horizons are narrowed. What's happening is that there's a kind of filtration process whereby information comes in and it's checked to see how easily it fits into what's already there.
That brought me back to George Lakoff.
You can only understand what the neural circuits of your brain allow you to understand. Any fact that doesn't fit that will be ignored or rejected as ridiculous and so on. They don't know their brains are being changed. They don't know this mechanism. They're just there. They listen to it.
It slides in and you barely notice because the information's familiar. You don't have to think about it. If those beliefs are very strongly and passionately held, then you may find that any belief that threatens them, it's just rejected out of hand.
You can't win because it doesn't make any difference how many facts you put out there. It's all about the emotion of anger and hate and fear.
So what kind of reaction are you getting from audiences? How many times has it been shown? I think I saw something online that it was first shown publicly at a Michael Moore festival in Michigan.
Oh, that was the that was a work in progress.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Michael Moore invited us to screen that there, and then we had several times where it screened at like the Dallas Film Festival and the Alexandria Film Festival and in Anchorage and a couple other places. But then recently it just started, finally, like, we finished it, and, you know, now we had a film festival premiere in San Jose, California. That was not that long ago. And we are going to have our theatrical premiere this 18th, this week coming up, this Friday. And it'll run for a week in New York and at the Cinema Village Theater, and for a week in Lemley Theater in L.A. And then after that, we have, you know, screenings like the one that's going to be in Kansas City that will, you know, several towns around the country. People will sometimes write us and say, I'd like to see this near me. So we ask them, we'll suggest a theater and we'll contact them, and we do that. And then if the theater wants to screen us, we'll work with the theater and do that.
And
it's going to be screening more. This is kind of like its big week.
So, and I'll repeat, it is screening one night only in Kansas City, Tuesday, March 22nd, 7 p.m. at the Tivoli Theater. If you want to be sure to see it, be sure to be there Tuesday, March 22nd in Westport. If people aren't able to see it there, where can they find out more information? Give us a website, and then...
Yes, they can find out on the website at www.thebrainwashingofmydad.com. We have a screening page, you know, where it will be seen. Also, they could sign up for updates, so they would get the information kind of like as soon as we know it and can get it out there. So they can sign up for updates on our website.
And documentaries tend not to have weeks-long showings in multiple theaters in the same town. Will it eventually be available as to purchase as a DVD or a download, or can media groups want to get it? Is that kind of planning in the works?
Yeah, I forgot to say that also this Friday it'll be available on video on demand, and so we'll post that on our website, all of the links where you could watch it online, and then eventually it'll be available for DVD.
Okay, so, and again, to keep up to date on that, go to your website, right, and sign
yes.
up?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What else would you like to tell our listeners about all this before we let you go?
Just that whatever issue you have, like Bob McChesney said, in order for you to get anywhere with it, you know, if you're an activist or you want to see change, you have to start with the media. You know, that has to be... Actually, I think that has to be number one, because if you don't have change in the media, you're not going to get your point across. And the right understood this very early on, and they were just brilliant. And we just, you know, progressives just stood by and weren't very organized and let it happen. And the other thing is the big tent idea, like Grover Norquist was brilliant. and that these Wednesday meetings that he had, he invited everybody, as long as they agreed on three things, like babies, guns, and taxes. In other words, you know, they didn't believe in abortion, and they were pro-gun and anti-taxes. You could bring whatever other issue there. So they had this big umbrella, and there's strength in numbers, and I think progressives are maybe a little bit more scattered and don't do that as much. So I just think that those two are really important points.
Yeah, I keep thinking of, you know, to many people, me included, probably the most important issue these days is climate change and doing something to deal with that. And what better example of media failure than the fair and balanced, you know, it's happening or it's not happening. Let's hear from both sides. Example
right.
of that. And the
the whole idea of fair and balanced, the media wasn't always about that. The media was more about objectivity. And when you have it about balance, you can have a point of view that really doesn't hold much water, but if you want to be balanced, you're presenting that point of view. And it would be great if people pushed for objectivity in their news. That's more important because 99% of scientists, for instance, believe, you know, in climate volatility, and maybe four of them don't. But the media has, especially the media on the right, has been very persistent in creating doubt, and also by presenting those other points of view, you know, without any objectivity. Of course, that's what they wanted to do. So we should work to change that.
Okay. Well, I'm afraid we probably are going to have to leave it about at that, but just one more time, give us the website and any real quick final thoughts you have.
Sure. The website is www.thebrainwashingofmydad.com, and you can sign up for updates if you want to find out when it's going to screen or where it's going to screen or what's happening with the film. Also, it's on Facebook, which I didn't mention before, and we're premiering this March 18th in New York and in L.A., and I hope everybody comes to see the film, and I hope that they enjoy it and get a lot out of it.
The Brainwashing of My Dad, a film by Jen Senko. Jen Senko, thank you very much for spending some time with us today on Tell Somebody.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Global warming, WMD in Iraq, and now in Iran, healthcare, Wall Street, we need to know things. Politics has been called the art of the possible. Media and journalism draw the boundaries of the realm of political possibility. I believe Shock and Awe in 2003 would not have been possible if the free press had done its job. But they didn't, and now nearly 4,500 American women and men in uniform have been killed, many thousands horribly wounded, probably over 1 million Iraqis dead, and a couple trillion of your tax dollars added to the debt. Let's fix it with Social Security. What do you say? The New York Times and Washington Post
have apologized for their failures, tepidly, in short articles buried on inside pages. But the consequences are still there. Former financial regulator, UMKC's Professor Bill Black, says that in the peak of the savings and loan crisis, we had 1,000 FBI agents. This crisis has losses 70 times larger than the savings and loan crisis. And the savings and loan crisis, when it happened, was considered the largest financial scandal in U.S. history. So now we're 70 times worse, and as recently as 2007, we had 120 FBI agents, one-eighth as many FBI agents for a crisis 70 times larger. And they looked not at the big folks, but almost exclusively at the little folks. Would the response to this massive fraud, or even the crisis itself, have been in the realm of the possible under the bright light of a robust free press if we had had one? And think of the consequences that have resulted from the dim bulbs of the fawning corporate media that we do have. So, are we citizens getting what we need to know?
Well, that's it. We're out of time. You've been listening to the podcast edition of the March 17, 2016 show, A Conversation with Jensenko, about her new film, The Brainwashing of My Dad. This podcast is being posted just ahead of a Tuesday, March 22, 2016, 7 p.m., special screening of the film at the Tivoli Manor Square in Kansas City, Missouri. www.tivolikc.com, www.thebrainwashingofmydad.com. Tell Somebody podcasts are produced and distributed by Tell Somebody and may or may not reflect the broadcasts of Tell Somebody that have been heard on 90.1 FM KKFI in Kansas City. This is the penultimate edition of the show, at least as a regularly scheduled weekly show. The final weekly broadcast will be a conversation with Mark Wilkerson about his new biography of Thomas Young, airing Thursday morning, March 24, 2016. One of my first shows was an October 2005 interview with Thomas Young, the Kansas City Iraq War veteran and activist paralyzed by a sniper's bullet in Iraq in 2004. When I heard the biography was coming out this spring, I decided to try to make that my last show. I do plan on doing occasional shows when I can, and keeping the Facebook page, the blog page, and the podcast site active. So keep an eye on www.tellsomebody.us, www.tellsomebody.libsyn.com, and like the Facebook page, www.facebook.com/tellsomebodynow. And follow me on Twitter at tellsomebodynow. This is Tom Clammer. I'll see you around.